is DH Radio on CJMQ 88.9 FM. My name is Sheila Q, and on the line with me now. Now listen to this. I think some people in Canadian music history, boy, they don't need too much of an introduction. And you guys know who Colin James is. He's a part of our music history, and I think somebody who could almost be categorized in kind of like a prodigy realm. I was drawing this weird parallel to you, Colin, as I was putting together information about your career, in that you started off really young.
Yeah.
And at a time when I think the kind of the growth of the industry was really at a funny point. It seems like as Canadians, there's a bit more of a fight or a struggle in establishing ourselves, or people establishing themselves as musicians and being kind of taken seriously on the scene, and you started out there at about 15, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Even earlier.
Now, 15 would have been when things really started picking up more. So
yeah, 13 was when I started with this bluegrass band. So that's when I first started playing in a band. But I played mandolin mostly back then. Yeah.
So I was thinking that one of the funny things about this parallel that I was drawing is I was thinking, you know, it means growing up in a completely different way, because you're surrounded with your peers become musicians or people who are involved more in the music realm and industry rather than peers who are your age. So I was thinking about, I was like, you know what? It's kind of like Beethoven. It was like, you know, playing concerts at like 7 and 8 years of age.
Beethoven, who can't read music. Actually.
Yeah. And went deaf. I mean, you know, that's anyway. So you're the non-deaf music reading Beethoven.
Yeah, I guess there's some loose connection there, maybe. I'm working on my symphony. Should be ready next week, I'm sure.
So, like, I mean, and your bio is crazy, you know. Command performer for the Queen. You've been on.
That was fun. I was thinking about that the other night when I played for the Queen. What a bizarre situation that was.
Tell me that story. I want to know that. What? How did that come to happen?
Well, it was Saskatchewan. It was in a big, huge, you know, arena, hockey arena, and for some reason they decided to get me to play. Because I'm from Saskatchewan,
right,
which is, I guess, understandable. But I picked a song called Misplaced Heart, which is a beautiful song I wrote with a friend of mine. But it's got very dark lyrics, like, you know, twisting and turning in the breeze, like lots of very dark imagery. And here I was singing to the Queen with a symphony orchestra with, like, probably, you know, 40 violins and all kinds of instruments. And it was just bizarre. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, my God. I'm playing for the Queen, and I'm playing a very bizarre song. So the whole thing was just very surreal, but beautiful, because the strings were gorgeous, and the song actually we recorded with strings, but only two, you know.
Right.
But anyway, it was a nice moment. But I was fortunate, you know, growing up when I was like a little guy, you know, I was kind of taken in by all these hippies. That's really the long and short of it.
Yeah.
Was that I started hanging out with people that weren't my age, that were, you know, in their 30s, and I liked them better.
Yeah,
I liked them better than the people who were my age, because people who were my age were confused and getting in trouble, and you know, and so I'd go straight from the high school where there was all that ostracization and all that posturing and BS, you know, straight to lunch at this my friend's house where we had banjos and dulcimers and guitars, and these people, although they smoked cigarettes and stuff, they were, you know, interesting, and they weren't part of that whole scene. So I just, as soon as I got wind of that, I said, that's it, that's what I want to do, you know. So I did that for quite a long time, and they taught me, they all really literally taught me how to play guitar and mandolin, yeah.
Do you feel like you missed out on something then in that case? Or like,
I did at the time. I rebelled against it, and I followed the folky set for the longest time until I kind of went, oh my God, how am I going to meet any girls, you know? So I made a good last-ditch attempt to kind of get into the new wave scene because, you know, people my age were listening to that. And that, you know, that although was interesting and fun, I mean, we opened up for Subhumans and DOA, and I was so out of place. Like, it was so, I was just completely bullshitting, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was, I liked music too much to belong to that scene. It was early anti-music in so many ways.
Yeah.
And but I felt good that I was at least, you know, hanging out with people my age, but I knew it was a bit of a sham as far as I was concerned, you know.
Well, I guess it kind of depends where your inspiration is coming from, right? Like, so if you can't really force inspiration, I don't think. So if it happens that you are there with people where their inspiration is coming from, a completely different emotion set.
No, and it was an exciting time. I mean, the Clash and the Sex Pistols and all those bands were starting to eclipse. So it wasn't like I wasn't digging some of that, and I really was. But really, my heart was in, Elizabeth Cotton and Odetta and Johnny Copeland and John Hammond Jr. and all this other stuff that had such a different upbringing, such a different start.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it all served me well at the end of the day. I mean, so temporarily I rebelled, but, you know, I still kept on going to folk festivals. And I think it's when I saw James Cotton, when I was 16, I saw James Cotton in a big outdoor festival playing, a Rocket 88, step in my rocker, baby, don't be late. We ain't going out about 8:30, and he was just killing it in front of 22,000 people and sweaty. And it was just, and that was it. And then I moved to Montreal, actually, when I was like 18, and I saw James Cotton there at the Cafe Campus.
Yeah.
And I used to go to the Rising Sun, and I saw like guys like Charles Brown and all kinds of people there too. So for a while, I just fell in love with the blues, outright.
I think that the the bluesy rockabilly scene in Montreal right now is really a gritty. I think it's one of the places where, speaking of that city, where I think a lot of that is
alive and well.
Yeah,
really.
Yep, yeah, and there are some pretty interesting places like the Bull and these other smaller venues that are filling up and selling out with on a regular basis with bands who are doing a lot of that, who are just driven by a lot of that sound. So it's really.
Is it some of the spillover from the Black Keys phenomenon? I mean, is that spilling over a little bit?
I think it's a little bit. Well, I don't even know. I think it's a little bit almost like the reverse. I think it's like the Black Keys are a part of it, but I think that it's coming from somewhere else. I don't know. I think it's that driven, when you're driven by the music and the sound and the style or an era or whatever, because a lot of them are sporting a rockabilly look too. It's not just the. It's the full-on get-up and the swing and the...
I went to Spain a few years ago. We played a few festivals over there. Crazy billing, like the Presidents of the United States of America,
yeah.
And then us, and then Little Richard, and then me, and then... Ridiculous, But
I would never put those three together.
I know. That's the European festivals for you. I love that about them.
I love
crazy.
That.
Crazy, I know. And when we did that festival, I really noticed Spain has a lot of rockabilly. There's lots of kids with, Levi's and chains,
mm-hmm.
and quiffs, and, it's really popular.
Yeah. Hey, look, okay, now I was looking at the lineup of people that you've worked with. Now that you're, that you've mentioned sort of this Little Richard, the president of the United States of America. Now I'm looking, okay, so Bonnie Raitt and Albert Collins and Pop Staples and Robert Crane, Luther Allison, Albert King, Keith Richards, Lenny Kravitz, ZZ Top, Mavis Staples, Roomful of Blues, Bobby King and Terry Evans, John Hammond Jr., The Chieftains, Carlos Santana, Little Feat, Johnny Halliday, Buddy Guy, actually, I think the first time I realized how versatile you were as an artist, as a listener, was that I was at the Canada Day Lansdowne Stadium concert, Canada Day 1994.
Mm.
And so that was, you were touring with the big band, the little big band, and it was you getting on stage with Tom Wilson of Junkhouse.
Yeah.
When I realized that you two had collaborated together, that was a really weird, that was like two things meeting in my mind that kind of blew my mind. And I guess you guys collaborated again, not that long ago, right? He's now Tom Wilson of Junkhouse and Blackie and the Rodeo Kings and other.
I've written more songs with Tom than anyone else at all.
it was such an interesting thing now, being that you were doing the big band thing at that time, and that Tom looked kind of, had this sort of, he was like a primitive guy. He's so
hairy, big, huge, loud, Renaissance man guy.
Yeah, totally. You know? And you were like super polished, and you know, had your, that it was such a great collaboration though. So you guys have done a lot of work together, right?
Yeah, we've retained a great friendship. You know, we're to this day, we're you know, one of my best friends in the world. He's just one of the most tapped in, creative, funny, you know, guys I've ever met, you know, and he loves all kinds of music, and you know, he loves Johnny Cash, but he loves Lucinda Williams, but he loves, you know, early rockabilly. He knows early Gene Vincent, like I know a bit about early. There's a lot of parallels, and I never would have thought when I heard that he was a fan, because I was a big fan of Going Out of My Head. When Junkos first came out,
yep.
I thought that song rocked really hard.
Yes.
And I couldn't believe he mentioned Tiny Grimes, because if you listen to the words, we got Tiny Grimes guitar, is one of the lines. And I thought Tiny Grimes was a 30s jug band guy, like a 30s. Why would you put his name in the song? That's insane, you know. So as soon as we met, and he turns out to be, you know, right when the Junkos were doing really well, they were listening a lot to Little Big Band One. So it turns out he was a big fan. And the very first time we got together, we wrote Freedom.
You know? Mm-hmm.
And since then, right now, we have Lucinda Williams just sang on a song that we wrote together that's coming out on Tom's record with the Blackie and the Rodeo Kings. They have a record coming out with called Kings and Queens. So they got, like, Levon Helm's daughter is on it, and Lucinda Williams is on it.
She's got probably, I think, in my mind, the most haunting voice in female voice in music ever.
Yeah,
I
she's
love
really
her
neat.
Sound. Yeah.
Yeah, she's so great. So she sang on a song I wrote, which is so exciting for me. I can't believe
it. What's it like to hear? Like, I mean, you compose it yourself, you're putting it together yourself. You think you're putting that out there, and then you're having it. Then it winds up being in the voice. And it's not just the voice, because there's a storytelling thing that happens too when people sing. What was it like hearing it put together and produced and done by Lucinda?
Well, these things come in like that. One was written in a hotel room in Toronto 2-3 years. Tom likes writing with me because anything I don't use, he uses. So he grabs all the leftovers, you know. So in this case, it was too country for me. It was called. Things I'm going through since I can't have, called Can't Have You, that's right. And I just remember the day we came up with the bridge, you know, it's amazing, you know, it's writing songs. And I have to say, you know, writing songs has never been the easiest thing for me. Out of all the things that this career has presented me, you know, singing was always, came pretty naturally, and playing always came naturally, but the real, you know, writing is the toughest thing, and some people are born to it. You know, I think some people are literally, you know, buy a book, and from then on they're a writer, whereas I always wanted to be like Buddy Guy or like all my heroes, and writing never really occurred to me until way later into my career. So it's the thing now where I still have to, you know, work the hardest at. I find that's the hardest thing is, you know, trying to write, because it's hard enough to write a song. Then you have to write a song that suits your voice, your key, you know, your plays to your strengths. It's hard enough just to be lucky enough to come up with a title that hasn't been used a billion times. So I find it's the hardest, most difficult thing.
That's really interesting to hear. I wasn't, you know, it's funny. I think because of your ease with, like, your voice is really versatile, and you're able to, you can get out a great range in a short space. You know, like you can take it all over the map. So it's surprising to hear that it's the words that the words come a little more difficult in a more difficult
fashion.
Yeah,
I think that's what makes, you know, and that's. I listen to a guy like Ray LaMontagne, you know, loving his records, and my God, he just cranking them out, you know.
Yeah.
And it's I have to watch. I get envious of people musicians I like. I just want to be like them, so I got to watch.
It's but I think being under the influence sometimes though makes us go to find those. You know, I always say it's not a road less traveled. It's not even a road. You're kind of like, hey, these brambles. I think I'm going to go through here.
Not this. And it's really important as a musician to find things you like. You know, it's really it's hard, and it's hard to find stuff that you really, you know, you listen to and go, yeah, man, that's awesome. You know.
So what would you say, like, if you're thinking about the music scene now, like I could say Canadian music scene, which I find is quite at a, it's just, the pulse is just throbbing. It's like a different, it feel, there's a different feel to it all around. It feels like there's more, I don't know, maybe I'm completely off on this, but it feels like there's more credibility in it. I can't think of what word it is, but something, or maybe it's just that people are just doing their thing.
I think it's becoming more, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think it's coming more often. I mean, I think, you know, there was a time I was like, hey, you know, the occasional Canadian would sneak through into the public, you know, especially in America. But I think, you know, obviously with Arcade Fire and a few bands like that, it's put it up a notch. But I think it's not a surprise anymore. I think there was a time where it was like, oh, another Canadian, weird, you know.
Yeah,
but
yes.
But I think now there's just been so many successful Canadians, you know, doing well in the world that I think we don't take it as such a shock anymore.
So you're on tour right now as we speak, and you're coming to Sherbrooke on the 26th.
Yeah.
Going to be in town. The Granada Theater, man, that's a good spot. It's a
good.
It's a sweet spot to be playing, so we'll be super happy to have you here.
It's really a nice thing. You know, it's really been nice to do this duo thing, too, I have to say. You know, playing acoustically has never been my, you know, it was never something I really aspired to hugely. I mean, I like it, but I never said, I want to be an acoustic musician. So doing these shows in a much more intimate setting, really, you know, it took some convincing for me. But I find there's a lot of payoffs, and I think the simplicity is one of my favorite things. You know, when I sit down with my buddy there, you know, we can decide to play that or not. You know, we can do it on a dime. We don't have a whole committee to go through, and we augmented the band the other night with a drummer and bass player, and I have to say, I kind of liked it better without, because that's where my head's at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we opened up a can of worms the other night, kind of augmenting it in Hamilton with a rhythm section. I kind of regretted it.
Well, it's sort of, it must be tough because you're, it has to do with a certain kind of headspace, I would think, when you're on the road. And if you have to shift,
I shifted out of the blue, and I kind of wished I hadn't, because we got a thing going that's kind of fun, and it's got its own magic. And as soon as you added the drums and bass, all of a sudden, well, you could play lots of things now. You know, you could do this and that. And before it was like, you know, it's you and me. We're going to make an attempt at this John Hiatt song, or we're going to make an attempt at this Colin James, you know, this one of mine. You know, God, I just talked about myself in the third person. Oh, my God. Help me.
But you know what? I think that's a good sign.
I don't know.
You know you have a repertoire, and you know it's out there, and you know we love it.
Oh, my Lord.
Hey, look, we are so looking forward to having you here. March 26th, Granada Theater. You guys have got to get yourself tickets, because Colin James is hitting our stage now.
And we'll play Why'd You Lie, even.
Oh, good. Great. Amazing. Hey, and Take It From the Top.
The new 14th, my 14th record.
Wow, that's unreal. And so, before you go, where did the title? How did you just decide on the title? Because I was like, you know, everybody can say kind of greatest hits or whatever, but it's nice to be able to choose a title.
It's really hard. It took me like 15 titles. It took a long time. They've all been done. You know, the Tragically Hip did Up to Here.
Yeah.
I did Then Again already, so I've already used one.
Yep.
Because it's my second best of. Second best of doesn't sound right, does it?
The best volume, too, sort of.
Forget the best. We're the rest, yeah. What was I saying? So it was really hard to come up with the title, actually, and it took a long time. And finally I went, okay. I used my first producer, Tom Dowd, famous American producer, Aretha Franklin and all these people. He always used to say, okay, everybody. He talked like a scientist. Let's take it from the tippy top, which I always thought was ridiculous. Tippy top, really? But it's what he would say. So it actually came from Tom Dowd indirectly, my very first producer, who I didn't get along with very well. It came from him.
Wow, I think it's brilliant. It makes total sense. It's great.
Except for I took Tippy.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know what? It's probably better that you didn't call it Taking from the Tippy Top.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I know.
I think,
good judgment.
I mean, this is just coming from a fan. But
Tippy, like, really? Tippy Top, really? Seth and Amy Myers. You know.
I think everybody would have been kind of stopping to wonder about that. That would have been the first line of questioning in every interview.
I know. Like, God knows I don't need that.
All right, look, Saturday night, March 26th, Colin James at the Granada Theater. You guys just don't miss it. It's going to be fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us at DH Radio.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Have a great day.
You too.